Before you listen to today's broadcast, can I ask you to do three things? First, pray with me that God would use this show to touch many lives in a lasting way. Second, if you're blessed by the broadcast, share it with others. Tell others about the Line of Fire. And third, would you pray about standing with us in support with a one-time gift or as a monthly torchbearer to help us spread the fire? If you'd like to stand with us, go to AskDrBrown.org. Click on support. Be blessed.
We've all heard the words of Jesus that we must lose our lives in order to save them, that we must deny ourselves and take up the cross and follow him. What does it actually mean? Dr. Martin Luther King is going to explain it for us today on The Line of Fire.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Tackling the controversies, engaging the culture, challenging the status quo, and taking your calls. Dr. Brown is the director of Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Call now at 866-34-TRUTH and get into the line of fire.
Thank you, friends, for joining us on this special broadcast today on Martin Luther King Day here in the United States of America. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. Don't pick up your phones to call. Sit back, enjoy the program, interact with me if you like on Facebook. Ask Dr. Brown, ask Dr. Brown on Facebook. Send in your thoughts and comments as you listen to the program. But I want to talk to you at length, so no calls. But you're gonna be challenged. You're gonna be spoken to. You're gonna be encouraged. You can do some soul searching. I want to talk to you at length. Some of the message of Dr. Martin Luther King speaking to us today. Now, I want to say up front, I understand some of his theology may have had liberal strains to it. I want to say plainly, I understand that there were moral failures in his life along the way. I want to say plainly that there are extraordinary things to learn from his life and from his message at the same time, and we will do that today. So those who revere the memory of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., those who don't think about him much, you are all going to be spoken to today. So sit back, enjoy the program. In fact, pick up your phone, call a friend, send a message, tweet someone, tell them to tune in. In my commentary on the book of Jeremiah, in the introduction, I take up an instance from the life of Martin Luther King because we need sometimes to get things into more contemporary terms to help us better relate to what happened to men and women of God in the distant past. In other words, an experience that someone had today or 30 or 40 years ago, it's something we can relate to better often than something we're reading about in the scriptures 2,500, 3,000, 4,000 years ago in another place, time, culture. So I put in this instance, in terms of the life of Martin Luther King, to remind us of some of what Jeremiah went through. The pressure, the intensity, the difficulty, the sense of wanting to break. So listen to this account. This is as related in Christian History Magazine, Volume 19, Number 1. By January 1956, with the Montgomery bus boycott in full swing, threatening phone calls, up to 40 a day, began pouring into King's home. Though he put up a strong front, the threats unsettled him. One midnight, as he sat over a cup of coffee worrying, the phone rang again. And the caller said, I'm just going to read the language as it was, "Nigger, we are tired of you and your mess now. And if you aren't out of this town in 3 days, we're going to blow your brains out and blow up your house." And let me just interject this. We're reading words, but can you imagine getting a call like this? You're under pressure already. You're worn out already. You know the intimidation is real. You know people will do these very things, and you might die or your family might die. And someone who just looks at you as vermin and dirt is very ready to carry this out. King later described what happened in the next few minutes. Quote, "I sat there and thought about a beautiful little daughter who had just been born. She was the darling of my life. I'd come in night after night and see that little gentle smile. And I sat at that table thinking about that little girl and thinking about the fact that she could be taken away from me any minute. And I started thinking about a dedicated, devoted, and loyal wife who was over there asleep. And she could be taken from me, or I could be taken from her. And I got to the point that I couldn't take it any longer. I was weak." Let me interrupt King's words here to say, God works through human beings. The prophet Jeremiah, although he never, ever backed down in public, sometimes in private, broke, cracked, poured out his heart to God. I talked about that on the program last week. And this was one of those moments for Dr. King where he got to that breaking point, where he got to that point of frailty, where he got to that point of saying, I can't take it anymore. The death threats, the thought of what could happen. He said, I couldn't take it any longer. I was weak. And I discovered then, he wrote, that religion had become real to me. And I had to know God for myself. And I bowed down over that cup of coffee. I never will forget it. I prayed a prayer, and I prayed out loud that night. I said, Lord, I'm down here trying to do what's right. I think I'm right. I think the cause we represent is right. But Lord, I must confess that I'm weak now. I'm faltering. I'm losing my courage. And I can't let the people see me like this, because if they see me weak, they will begin to get weak. Again, let me interject some thoughts here, and I'm going to be reading comments of Dr. King and others through the broadcast today. If you're just tuning in, not taking calls today on this special broadcast on Martin Luther King Day, but by all means encourage your friends to listen in, because you will be challenged and edified. If you are a leader, be it the leader of your home with your kids looking to you, be it the leader of your business, be it the leader of your congregation or ministry, it's one thing to put up a false front. It's one thing to be phony and to try to look like you're strong when you've got nothing going on the inside. And soon enough, people will see through that, and they'll feel something's wrong. I mean, kids can feel it. People you work with that are close to you, they can feel it. But it's imperative for us as leaders to meet with God in such a way, to get hope in such a way, to get vision in such a way, to get courage in such a way that we can give that courage and hope to others. Look, you know me if you've listened to this show over the years that we've been on. I'm constantly sounding an alarm. I'm constantly bringing a wake-up call. I'm constantly warning about the situation in which we're in as a body in America and the condition of society today. But I'm doing it not in some worked-up way to try to give you some kind of false hope. I'm doing it with deep, deep confidence in my heart that God reigns, with deep, deep confidence in my heart that there's nothing anybody can ultimately do against me or against us, that there may be temporary things, earthly things, momentary things that people can do against us, but nobody can ultimately hurt me. With every fiber of my being, I believe that. No, I know that. If I'm right with God, nobody can hurt me. Oh, they may take my life. They may cause me to suffer different ways in this world. They may put me through difficulty and pain, but nobody can hurt me. Nobody can touch me if I'm doing the will of God. Do you understand what I'm saying? By His grace, my relationship with Him will be intact. By His grace, the calling on my life will be intact. By His grace, His purposes will succeed in my life. And the more things go against me and the more people come against me, if I honor Him, if I walk with Him, then everything meant for evil will turn for greater good. I believe that to the very core of my being. And any encouragement you get from me is not some empty pep talk. Hip, hip, hooray, but I really don't feel that way. No. From the very core of my being, I know the reality of the goodness of God and the purposes of God and the lordship of Jesus. And therefore, I have confidence. One of these days, I'm going to do a show on why I am an optimist in God. But back to the crisis point here in the life of Dr. King. Again, listen to the prayer he prays. I prayed a prayer. I prayed it out loud that night after getting threatened. 40 calls a day, up to 40 calls a day coming into his home. The threats unsettling him. I prayed a prayer, he said. I prayed out loud that night. I said, Lord, I'm down here trying to do what's right. I think I'm right. I think the cause we represent is right. But Lord, I must confess that I'm weak now. I'm faltering. I'm losing my courage. And I can't let the people see me like this, because if they see me weak, they will begin to get weak. Oh, friends, that's the beginning of where we get strength from. That's the beginning of how strength rises in our lives. Out of weakness, God's strength is made perfect. Out of our weakness, out of our inability, out of us coming to the end of ourselves, not because of sin and rebellion, but because of human weakness, we come to that point, we recognize it has to be God. It's only God who can accomplish His will through me. And something happens then, that out of our weakness, strength comes. So King says, I can't let the people see me like this, because if they see me weak, they'll begin to get weak. And it seemed at that moment, I could hear an inner voice saying to me, Martin Luther, stand up for righteousness. Stand up for justice. Stand up for truth. And lo, I will be with you, even until the end of the world. Almost at once, he said, my fears began to go. My uncertainty disappeared. Whoa. And that's why we celebrate his life and recognize his achievements on this day, because he didn't cave in. Because in terms of key areas in life, God was with him. Again, as I said at the beginning, I recognize the issues, the personal moral issues that were in his life. I recognize that there may have been liberal strains of his theology. I'm not trying to glorify a man. I'm recognizing that God worked through him and that there was great courage and great eloquence and great articulation of key areas. You know, I just want to say this about the example we set. If you've got a fire drill in school and the moment the fire alarm goes off, teachers start going, oh no, it's a fire, we're going to die. Those kids will be jumping out the windows. But you say, okay, kids, just the way we practiced it, everybody follow me with a smile, there'll be calmness. If we lead, let's lead out of the confidence in God. And out of that confidence, it'll become contagious in the hearts of wives and others. We come back. I'm going to read to you, share with you the most challenging quotes from King, and they'll be challenging for us today. Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown, pleased to be with you today, this special Martin Luther King Day. Hey, maybe you've never listened to the show. Maybe you're off work, or your schedule's different. Let me take a moment to say hi. I am a Jewish believer in Jesus. My testimony is literally from LSD to PhD. God saved me as a heroin-shooting, rock-drumming LSD-using, rebellious 16-year-old Jewish teenager in 1971. It gave me a passion to see Jesus glorified, whatever the cost, whatever the consequence. And it is our goal here on the Line of Fire broadcast to be a voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution following the principles of Jesus. And we're not taking calls today as we normally do. We're focusing on the message of Dr. Martin Luther King, edifying, life-challenging words that he spoke that we need to take heed to. We need moral courage. This is an era of such moral ambiguity. This is an era of such moral compromise. This is an era of such moral uncertainty. This is an era of such moral cowardice. Often in the church, we need a fresh wave of moral courage to rise up, and that will come from convictions from God through his word, through fellowship with him, through communion with his people of like heart. If you've not been to my website, please visit us, askdrbrown.org. Next break, if you haven't been there, take a few minutes, askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire for today's broadcast and past broadcasts. You can subscribe there by podcast and get behind what we're doing. All right. In the midst of the civil rights movement, as Dr. King was teaching his nonviolent principles, the problem was there was violent opposition. The followers of King were acting in a nonviolent way, in an exemplary way, both black and white standing together for these principles of righteousness and fairness in our society, with the mountain of segregation and injustice and prejudice staring them in the face. But there was violence against them, sometimes deadly violence. And people began to question, do we need another strategy? And if we're going to be so upfront with our nonviolent resistance and it's getting violent repercussions, maybe we need to back down or change our strategy. So Dr. King addressed this. March 8th, 1965, Selma, Alabama, Brown Chapel AME Church. I have this on video, and it's tremendous to see the people packed in the building and standing out the doors listening over loudspeakers. Listen to what Dr. King said with such amazing eloquence. He said, deep down in our nonviolent creed is the conviction that there is something so dear, something so precious, and something so eternally true that they are worth dying for. And if a man happens to be 36 years old, as I happen to be, and some great truth stands before the door of his life, some great opportunity to stand up for that which is right, he's afraid his home will get bombed. He's afraid he'll lose his job, or he's afraid that he'll get shot or beat down by state troopers. He may go on and live until he's 80, but he's just as dead at 36 as he would be at 80. And the cessation of breathing in his life is merely the belated announcement of an earlier death of the spirit. Dr. King said this, and I've quoted these words many, many times in America and around the world. A man dies when he refuses to stand up for that which is right. A man dies when he refuses to stand up for justice. A man dies when he refuses to take a stand for that which is true. So we're going to stand up right here amid horses. We're going to stand up right here in Alabama amid billy clubs. We're going to stand up right here in Alabama amid police dogs, if they have them. We're going to stand up amid tear gas. We're going to stand up amid anything that they can muster up, letting the world know that we are determined to be free. Whoa, what a quote. In the Gospels, one of the sayings that Jesus repeated over and again, because we have it recorded over again in the Gospels, is that if you save your life, you lose it. You'll find it. I can tell you this off the top of my head because I've looked at these verses so many times. You'll find this in Matthew 10, Matthew 16, Mark 8, Luke 9, another form in Luke 14, another form in Luke 17, another form in John chapter 12. And then you'll find Paul reiterating that about his own life in Acts chapter 20. And then you'll find it in Revelation chapter 12, verse 11, how the saints overcome Satan, remember? They overcame by the blood of the Lamb, by the word of their testimony, and by not loving their lives, even to the point of death. What did Jesus mean when he said, if you save your life, you lose it? If you lose your life for my sake in the gospel, you find it. It's the same principle that Dr. King articulated with these words, a man dies when he refuses to stand up for that which is right. A man dies when he refuses to stand up for justice. A man dies when he refuses to take a stand for that which is true. Do you understand the concept? Do you understand what it means that if I live my life based on what people think, if I compromise my convictions for the sake of my companions, if I live my entire life just trying to please people, if I know what's right but don't do it, well, you know, it's better I just raise on my job, get more secure position here. You know, if I back down here, I'll get the recommendation from my professor and get into this program. You know, if I just kind of water the thing down, the people will like me in the church, and the more people come, I won't lose the rich tithing members, and on and on. We die when we do that. We become slaves to people's opinions. We become slaves to finances. We become slaves to the constantly changing moods of the society. We lose our lives. Whereas, if we say, with all respect, with all humility, with all honor towards those that differ with me, I have to do what's right in God's sight. I have to be true to the convictions that are written way, way, way down deep in my heart. I have to. You may lose your life. You may lose that job. You may lose your reputation. You may lose friends. You may even physically lose your life in terms of people martyring you for the gospel. But that's when you really live. Either moving from this world into eternal life in the full, or moving to a place of freedom. Hey, you can't threaten me. You can't intimidate me because I already died. And the life I live, Galatians 2, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. Or we do it with humility. We don't do it with arrogance and I'm the one and no one can teach me and correct me. No, in the fear of God and humility, you pray, you wrestle with things. But can I talk to you candidly? Again, maybe this is the only day we'll get to talk because you've got a different schedule with the day off, the holiday today. Maybe you just happen to tune in and this is the one time we're ever going to talk. Is it possible, friend, that you've done this very thing, that something in you died years ago because you knew it was right and you didn't do it? You put political expediency or financial expediency or career expediency or friendship expediency or something else before what you really knew was right, before what you really knew what was one of those life and death things that you couldn't compromise on. And by compromising, something in you died. Something in you, that spark, that vitality, that courage, that boldness, the vision, it died and it's not there anymore. It's not too late to rekindle it. What you need to do is first go to God and recognize the error and confess whatever it is. I wanted to please people rather than please you. I bowed down to financial expediency rather than bowing down to your principles. I was afraid of the faces of people instead of fearing your face, Lord. Whatever it is, confess it as sin to God and ask him. Not in some reactionary way where you go out and do something silly. Ask him to help you to recover what's been lost so that you can lose your life for Jesus and thereby find it and thereby really live. Dr. King had some words of wisdom in terms of the role of the church and the state. We'll talk about that when we come back. And if what I'm saying is speaking to you directly, drop me a line. AskDrBrown.org. Click contact us. AskDrBrown.org. Drop me a line. Tell me what's going on in your life. Come to every tribe and tell me, send a revolution. guest today, this Martin Luther King Day here on the Line of Fire, Michael Brown. Glad to be with you. Not taking calls, so don't pick up the phone to call. I want to get in everything I can today talking about Dr. King and really just sharing some of his message with us today. Whether you revere his memory, whether you don't think about him a lot, whether you've concentrated more on the fact that, yeah, there are some moral failures and, yeah, some of his theology may have had liberal strains to it. That's not my issue at all. I recognize the courage of the stance he took. I recognize the incredible way, the prophetic way in which he presented things to the nation and to the church. And I think it's important that we listen to some of his message. And by the way, if you've read some of my books over the years or listened to me speak, you'll see that I've quoted some of his words many a time. So this is not just something I'm doing today. In fact, I'm taking more time today because I normally don't have enough time to get into some of the things he said that I deeply appreciate. By all means, visit us online at askdrbrown.org. And if you are not part of our online community, please sign up for our email. And may I heartily commend to you our online class, one of the key classes I teach here at FIRE, Principles of Revival. You can now study with me online. The entire class, notes and everything, at your leisure over a three-month period, whenever your schedule permits, at a dirt cheap price, trust me. AskDrBrown.org, right on the homepage. Check on the online classes. Okay. One of the sayings of Dr. King that I quote probably most often is this, and this comes up in the constant debate, and what about separation of church and state? And of course, that's stood on his head through the Supreme Court rulings 50, 60 years ago, and then the reinterpretation of that clause. What was initially something to keep the state out of the church has become something to keep the church out of the state. But the moment you speak up for what's right, the moment you speak up about biblical convictions, well, you're trying to start a theocracy. Well, you're trying to just take over. And what I tell people is, like, no, actually, aside from many of the finest principles in America, going back to Judeo-Christian biblical principles, aside from that, I just tell people, I'm just speaking as a citizen. You can come to your worldview as an atheist. In America, you have every right to vote and every right to speak and every right to try to influence people. You can come to your worldview as a New Ager, as a Buddhist, as a Muslim, as a Hindu, as a liberal Christian, as a conservative Christian. You can come to your worldview. You can meditate in the yoga or lotus position, whatever it is, and come to your worldview that way and vote based on it, try to influence people. That's what you do in America. I'm coming to my views based on Scripture, based on my relationship with God. And based on that, I'm going to speak up. Based on that, I'm going to speak out. Based on that, I'm going to vote. I'm not trying to take over. I'm not trying to make everybody do what's in the Bible. I'm speaking as a citizen. Everybody has that right. But listen to what Dr. King said. I find this to be right on and a tremendous prophetic warning. In fact, I'm sad to say that by and large, what he warned about has happened. King said this, "The church must be reminded that it is not the master or the servant of the state, but rather the conscience of the state." Let me read that again before I give you the warning. King said, "The church must be reminded that it is not the master or the servant of the state, but rather the conscience of the state." You know, if we think that we're the master of the state, well, we're God's people, and we're going to tell you what to do, and America's a Christian country, and it never was in terms of totally Christian country, obviously. But yeah, Christian roots and foundations in many ways, and other things not Christian and roots and foundations. But the notion, well, we're going to take over. No, the church is not the master of the state or the servant. It's not for the state to tell the church how to do what it does. The church must be reminded that it is not the master or the servant of the state, but rather the conscience of the state. It must be the guide and the critic of the state and never its tool. If the church does not recapture its prophetic zeal, it will become an irrelevant social club without moral or spiritual authority. Boy, that is exactly what has happened. That is exactly what has happened. We have lost our prophetic zeal. We have lost our prophetic courage, and instead we have become an irrelevant social club without moral or spiritual authority. Professor Stephen Carter, also a black American law professor, at Yale University. Listen to what Carter said. I've quoted him on this many times as well. Along with many African-American theologians, he said, "I believe in the tremendous importance of preserving religious communities, not only as centers of difference, that is, places where one grasps the meaning of the world as different from what you find in the dominant culture, but even more so as centers of resistance. These centers of resistance do not simply proclaim, we don't believe what the rest of you believe, but say, we are willing and ready to sacrifice, to lose something material for the sake of that difference in which we believe. Indeed, radical transformation will demand a sacrifice, but a fundamental demand for sacrifice will not arise in politics. It will have to arise from the church, which is really the only contemporary, genuine source of resistance to the existing order. Nobody else can do it. Nobody was ever persuaded to go out and risk life and limb because of reading a smart article on philosophy and public affairs. No people ever said they were going to organize a march and be beaten by the police because of something they read in the New York Times op-ed page. There's only religion that still has the power at its best to encourage sacrifice and resistance. Yet one should have no illusions. All too many pastors today, black and white, are so worried about filling the seats. Clergy deliver brilliant sermons that preach up to the edge of asking people to do something, and then they will pull back. Some pastors display prophetic leadership and call for sacrifice, but their numbers are small. So said Professor Stephen Carter. And I heartily agree with that assessment as well, along with the calling of the church to be a center of resistance. Let me make this plain. As God's people, as a church community, we should be known for our ministry to the poor and the hurting. We should be known for the demonstration of compassion. We should be known for being madly in love with Jesus and being all about him. We should be known for many positive virtues. We should be known for having solid families. We should be known for having godly marriages and godly kids. We should be known for seeing people's lives transformed. Wow, yeah, my friend, he was heavily on drugs, and he started going to that fellowship you have there. Boy, he heard about Jesus. He's changed. Oh, not known as perfect people, but certainly known as people different than the world, but not just nice people, not just loving people. Not because if you want to be Christ-like, you can't just be nice and loving. You also have to go against the grain of sinful society. Jesus was crucified by a world that hated him. Yes, he opposed the religious establishment, but the fact is Jesus said the world hates him and the world will hate us too. Not because we're obnoxious, not because we're foolish, not because we're irrelevant, but because we shine the light and we walk in the light. And just as the civil rights movement, friends, was birthed out of black churches in America, was it not? All of you know the history. It was birthed out of black churches in America, whether the leaders were born-again Christian or reverend in name only. God knows that. But these were reverends at the head. This was the meetings were held in churches. The black churches were the beginning of the resistance, and out of that came a national civil rights movement. Resistance to what is wrong in our society through the loving, gracious, godly principles of Jesus, not through violent confrontation and anger, God forbid, but through the principles of Jesus. Resistance to the godless trends of our society must begin in the church, and it must begin with us as leaders, and it must begin in our personal lives and there flow out to touch the world. Much more to come. Stay with us. In the right place at the right time, listen to the right show. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us on the Line of Fire. I just about said on the Line of Father, not the Line of Father, the Line of Fire. Thank you for being with us on the special Martin Luther King Day. I'm departing from our normal call-in format today and talking about some of the significant message that Dr. King brought to the last generation. And I have often quoted his words and looked to his example of one that stood up for what was right, following nonviolent principles. Now, he learned a lot from Gandhi and Jesus. Gandhi learned the nonviolent principles from Jesus as well. Ultimately, Jesus is our example of holy, nonviolent resistance to what is wrong. So I'm not taking calls, but please go to the website, askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. There's always a lot of information, other links, worthy things for you to check out there. And if you missed any of the broadcasts, that's where you can catch all of it. a few more. I've got time for a few more quotes, anecdotes from King. Throughout the Montgomery, Alabama campaign, critics complained about the ordained clergy's involvement in, quote, earthly temporal matters. Your clergy. I said at the end of the last segment, we've got to remember that the civil rights movement was birthed out of black churches, and it's out of churches today, black, white, interracial, Asian, whichever churches, Messianic Jewish congregation. It's out of the body today that resistance to the wrong social order must come. Now, please understand, when I say the word resistance, I mean spiritual moral resistance. I do not mean that we rally people, get them all stirred up and angry. We're going to march down the street and yell and shout and intimidate people. And no, that's not. We can shout to the Lord in the service, but we're not out to intimidate people. And God forbid that we have any kind of show of force that's completely contrary to the spirit of Jesus. God forbid that we appeal to a rebellious anger in young people and others, get them all stirred up to get mad. No, I want to get you stirred up to get on fire, stirred up to stand with Jesus and to go out and love on people and to go out and do what's right and to go out and take a stand for what's right in the society, in the home, in the place of business, wherever it is that God's put us. We are to be the moral conscience of the society. We must be. Again, to quote King once more, the church must be reminded that it is not the master or the servant of the state, but rather the conscience of the state. But critics were complaining, well, what's the clergy doing involved in the civil rights movement? And King, however, believed, quote, this view of religion was too confined. He saw his civil rights activities an extension of his ministry. Quote, the Christian gospel is a two-way road, he said. On the one hand, it seeks to change the souls of men and thereby unite them with God. On the other hand, it seeks to change the environmental conditions of men so the soul will have a chance after it is changed. Oh my, did you hear that? Unless you change the environmental conditions, the conditions in which people live, when people do get saved, do get changed, they won't make it. You know how difficult it is in a real rough inner city environment where maybe one gal's had four different kids by three different men and a six-year-old boy is used to carry drugs for his drug-addicted dad that he hardly sees and on and on. You know how hard it is for someone to really get discipled that environment? Unless you can change the environment, change the family, change the upbringing. It's all part of the gospel. The fact that Jesus healed the sick and fed the hungry reminds us that he cares about things in this world, that the kingdom of God will ultimately be established here in this earth. That yes, this world is not our eternal home as it is now. We're passing through, but we're looking to a better world, a new heavens and a new earth. And while we are here, we must pursue what? The kingdom of God and his righteousness, and that works itself out in every area of life. May I be so bold as to do this as a white Jew? May I be so bold as to appeal to my black brothers and sisters listening? And by the way, I've always felt a special kinship as a Jew with the black community, maybe both being liberated slaves in our past, I don't know, oppressed minorities. And you know, as a drummer, I enjoy going to black churches because they clap on the beat, you know. There's a certain rhythm, vitality, life. I've loved ministering in black churches and working with my black brothers and sisters through the years. But I want to make a bold appeal as a white Jewish American to my black brothers and sisters, especially those in leadership. We need you to courageously lead the way again. We need you to regain any moral courage that's been lost. And not fighting for welfare and not fighting for some monetary cause, but fighting for justice, helping lead the way in the pro-life movement for the unborn, helping lead the way in sanity and marriage and family and lead the way against gay activism, lead the way in so many other areas. People listen to you, my friends, more than they listen to me as a moral voice for the society. It's part of your heritage, part of your calling. Let's step up to the plate together and make a difference. Can we? All right, I've, I've got a few minutes left. I'm going to make it count on this Martin Luther King Day as we've been looking at some of his words, some of his message. Those of you that don't know me, maybe haven't tuned in before, haven't read some of my writings, you might not know that I've often quoted Dr. King and find so many of his words, his message, quite relevant for us today. Not taking calls, but by all means, visit us at askdrbrown.org. We've got hundreds of hours, literally hundreds of hours of free material there. You want to be inspired, you want to be pushed, you want to be helped, you want to be equipped, you want to be edified with messages, just go to the website. Hundreds of hours of free messages you can listen to, video resources you can watch for free on the website, and then books you can purchase, online classes you can take. And if you believe in what we're doing, if you believe in us standing as a voice for moral, cultural, spiritual revolution, if you want to enable us to speak to more and more people through the radio airwaves and many other means, would you consider being a torchbearer, becoming a monthly supporter, standing with us? Not a dime of the money goes into my pocket or a staff. It simply goes to help us reach more people through the airwaves and raise up more missionaries and send them to the ends of the earth and reach Jewish people with the gospel. So your support goes a long way. Would you pray about it and consider being one of our torchbearers, being a monthly supporter? And as you go online, you'll find out there are many perks and benefits, ways that we say thank you to our monthly supporters every month. Go to askdrbrown.org. Click on support. Okay, Dr. King's famous letter from a Birmingham jail. He gets arrested. He's in Birmingham. And criticized, well, you know, you're an outsider. What brought you here? You're not local clergy. And to his shock, an ad comes out in the newspaper by different clergy members criticizing King and what he's doing. So they're in jail for righteousness, for taking a stand against the injustice in our society. He writes just on little margins of papers and things like that. He writes out his famous letter from a Birmingham jail. And I don't want to close here with a quote from King and then give you my bottom line thoughts. He wrote, "I must make two honest confessions to you, my Christian and Jewish brothers. First, I must confess that over the past few years, I've been gravely disappointed with the white moderate. I have almost reached the regrettable conclusion that the Negro's great stumbling block in his stride toward freedom is not the white citizen's counselor or the Ku Klux Klanner, but the white moderate, who is more devoted to order than to justice, who prefers a negative peace, which is the absence of tension, to a positive peace, which is the presence of justice, who constantly says, 'I agree with you in the goal you seek, but I cannot agree with your methods of direct action,' who paternalistically believes he can set the timetable for another man's freedom, who lives by a mythical concept of time and who constantly advises the Negro to wait for a more convenient season. Shallow understanding from people of goodwill is more frustrating than absolute misunderstanding from people of ill will. Lukewarm acceptance is much more bewildering than outright rejection." So said Dr. King in his letter from a Birmingham jail. Let me give you my bottom line thoughts, friends. Many black Americans, African Americans, suffering under segregation, suffering under the horrific history in America of slavery and discrimination, many were awakened a generation ago to stand up for what was right and to go against the grain and to say it doesn't matter what it costs us, we must have our freedom. Can I say now to all black and white, yellow, any color background listening to me, there's a far worse freedom that we have surrendered right on our own watch. It's the freedom of conscience. It's the freedom of speech. It's the freedom of conviction. It's the freedom of courage. It's the freedom to go against the grain. It's the freedom to take up the cross and follow Jesus at any cost or consequence. We've bowed down to the culture to the point of becoming irrelevant. It's time we recapture our prophetic zeal, recapture our courage, and become disciples of Jesus again. Visit me at askdrbrown.org.